The Mac Observer is a Mac Geek Gab episode 569 for Tuesday, September 8th, 2015. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. The show where you send in questions, we provide answers. It's kind of like Car Talk for Apple geeks, except we're still making the show, and that's a good thing. Today, the goal is to learn at least four new things. I know, that's higher than some shows.
Wow, you're raising the bar.
I raised the bar. I did. Yeah, I'm raising the bar.
Ask me about that first.
I don't know.
I concur. Four is good. Actually, four is one of my lucky numbers, so I'm good with that.
All right, cool. Sponsors for this show include, or for this episode, I should say, include Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek. Coupon code geek gets you 20% off of software at the Smile store this month and half of next. We'll talk more about that shortly here. Linda at lynda.com/mgg and also Squarespace at squarespace.com/mgg. We'll talk all about that in a moment here, back here in Durham, New Hampshire. Yet again, seems like I've been traveling a ton. I'm Dave. Who am I? I'm Dave Hamilton. That's who I am.
And here in post Labor Day, Fairfield, Connecticut, which now means that the riffraff can park on the street.
Right.
Without a permit. This is, they're not all riffraff, but some are, I'm sure. This is John F. Braun.
How you doing today, John F. Braun?
Good. Yeah. Good. So, we have this in our community, and I'm sure many do. But yeah, if you have the magic sticker as a resident, you can park near the beach.
Sure.
Otherwise they tow your butt.
Yep.
And that time has passed, and I was at a nice little family event. I think you went on a little journey and have some.
I modified myself on this journey.
Yeah, some news that concerned many of us if we follow you on social media. So how are you, my friend? You're able to speak.
I
hear you. Though I think some of your other abilities may be curtailed for a brief time.
So we went to family camp for our seventh year in a row. We go up to Camp Huckins, which is here in New Hampshire, and it's all year long. I think I've talked about this, but briefly, it's a girls' camp all year long, and then on Labor Day they do a family camp. So we live in the cabins that the campers would live in. It's just our family, you know, the four of us in one cabin. And there's a bunch of other families. There were about 175 people, I think. And, you know, you do all the stuff that you would do at camp. You eat the camp food, you do, you know, arts and crafts, you do kayaking, you know, you sail, you make s'mores at the fire. Absolutely. Right. I brought my guitar. We all kind of passed it around and played songs at the campfire, that sort of thing. And every year, as it's come to be a tradition at family camp, there was a touch football game, and it's really friendly and, you know, fun. And so, of course, I played, and I went up to make a catch that was for a ball that was overthrown, and I jumped and still missed the ball because it was much higher than I was. And so as I'm coming down, I looked and I'm like, all right, good. I got this landing. I'm going to be okay. And then this little kid, he couldn't possibly have pushed me any lighter than he did. But he thought maybe I caught it. And so he was going to tap me just in case, you know, because why not? You got to tag the guy. Otherwise he runs away. And that was that little tap was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And it just pushed me enough so that I lost my balance and I fell backwards. Now, I was smart. I didn't put my hand right down because you're not supposed to. But I fell hard on my butt. Actually went back and hit my head. Thankfully, no concussion. But somehow I rolled onto my wrist. And I think my watch, I wasn't wearing my Apple Watch, but one of my other watches, I think it caught like on the ground or something. And like the face of it had dirt in it. So that sort of made me think that, yeah. Anyway, it rolled the wrist. I continued. I finished the game. My wrist wasn't quite right. It got a lot worse. It swelled up. But and so it's been, I had it x-rayed yesterday. But the first thing I did at camp, and this is, here's a tip for you. Go and get yourselves 128 hertz low C tuning fork. 128 hertz is low C, so they are synonymous. But you don't want to get a high C. You don't want to get a 256. You want to get a 128, right? And 128 hertz low C, the way you can test for broken bones with this. It's a field test. Obviously, it's not meant to replace an X-ray, although at times it's more accurate than an X-ray for very, you know, thin fractures that an X-ray won't show you. But I took that tuning fork. What you do is first you poke yourself with the tuning fork that's not vibrating so that you get a feel for what sort of pain normal palpation incurs. And then you get that thing ringing and you put the base of it against a bone. And you can tell if it's broken by the amplitude of the patient's scream or the speed at which the patient's fist is flying at you, because it will cause a great deal of searing pain if, in fact, there is a break.
So is this like a resonant frequency?
Bingo.
Kind of?
That's exactly
okay, so the
right.
Frequency that the frequency that this fork generates is one that will cause pain if you have a broken bone.
You got it. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, okay. So we traveled.
I have never broken a bone in my life.
I have.
I think I bruised a rib, but I've never broken a bone.
So. I broke a rib and I broke a toe, and I don't think I broke a wrist because I tested everything. And it was, I mean, it's, listen, my wrist is sprained and it's sprained badly. There's no question about that. But I tested everything and there was nothing. Obviously, it swelled up and, you know, all of that stuff. But yesterday I went and got an X-ray and the X-ray showed nothing. But there is one bone in the wrist that they say is, it's called the scaphoid, that they're always worried about, and it won't ever show up on an X-ray. But it is one that I, even not knowing that it was the problematic one, I tested that one too, and there was no problem with it. But, you know, I went to one of these quick emergency clinics because that's what's open for an X-ray on Labor Day when we got home. And they said, well, it's definitely sprained and we're going to say it's broken so that, we're covered, but, you need to see an orthopedist. And it's like, awesome. So basically what you're telling me is the same thing a 3-year-old kid at camp said, well, looks like it's sprained, might be broken. You should see a doctor. But that's, so I'm going to see an orthopedist later this week and sort it all out, but it's sore as you might imagine, but, it's all right. I'm okay. I'll make it through the show. I've got it in a brace, just to keep me from doing something stupid with it. But if I'm just sitting and doing nothing, then I will.
Okay. You know, yeah. Are you taking any sort of anti-inflammatory?
Yeah, I am. I've been taking Advil and stuff, which I had at camp with me. So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I hope. Yeah, I've had my bumps and bruises throughout life. But yeah, as we get older, which not saying you're old, but
I am older than I used to be, though.
as are we. So, that's too bad. Now, did you have a talk with this little person that kind of got in your way? Or
he felt so bad. And it's totally obviously
basically,
not his fault.
No, you're playing the game.
Right.
Yeah, it's right. The risk you got to take. So maybe you need to wear more protective equipment the next time you play touch football or something, right?
Yeah, well, so the problem is my family has this vision that I hurt myself every year at family camp, and it's simply not true. I have hurt myself twice there. Once, obviously, this weekend. So there's one. And then about 5 years ago, I broke a rib playing capture the flag. I was chasing this little girl and trying to tag her because she was running with the flag, you know. And so I dove to tag her and I got her. And after I tagged her, I kind of looked behind me and saw my feet were like, you know, about 6 feet behind my head. And there was no chance of those feet getting underneath me before the ground rose up and got me. So I did what you're supposed to do. I tucked. I didn't put my wrist down because I don't want to break my wrist, you know. And I tucked, and the problem was I landed elbow first, and that popped a rib open. Not open. I mean, it wasn't an open wound, but it cracked my rib. And so I had to live for 3 days at family camp with a cracked rib, which if you've ever had one of those, man, it's painful to breathe. But that's the only other injury I've had at family camp, other than just being sore because I run around like a maniac because I act my shoe size at camp, not my age. And so 13 works, you know, it's good. Anyway, that's where we're at. Should we go to Larry here, John?
Might as well.
We might as well. Yeah. All right, here we go. Larry writes, I have extended my network to a far corner of my house with power line extenders at their source feed directly off of my Airport Extreme. At the far end, I have plugged in another Airport Extreme into the other power line. Via Ethernet cables, I have attached a number of devices, but with only 3 available ports on my Airport Extreme, I do not have enough access points. I'm running video and audio and would prefer to be wired rather than wireless. So I bought another router, a TP-Link TLR860, which has 8 Ethernet ports, more than enough. When I'm using the Airport Extreme at the far end to access my network, the world is my oyster and I can access the internet and my local devices on my network like other computers and such. But when I'm using the TP-Link router, although I can access the internet, I cannot access anything else on my network. It seems weird that I can get outside via the Airport Extreme, but can't get anything that's connected directly to that device internally. Is it like my main router isn't permitting access? Okay, well, it is like that, but it's a little more complicated. So here's the thing.
To crystallize, though, I want to try to, crystallize this. We have a situation where we have two routers on the network.
Correct. I think
that's the... And that's the source of not the problem. Well, problem. Yes. Yeah. We're going to say it's a problem.
Yeah.
But having multiple routers on a network brings up certain challenges, which, Dave, you are going to help us solve.
That's right. So you're right. The problem is that there's two devices both acting as routers. They don't have to be, though. Your TP-Link router that we'll call the extension device should not be acting as a router. What's happening is it's getting the connection from your Airport Extreme. And then just like your Airport Extreme is with the cable modem's connection, the TP-Link is then creating its own subnet, its own network from the Airport Extreme's connection. And so the things that are on the TP-Link's network can't see the things that are on the Airport Extreme's network because they're not equal in the hierarchy. They're one level up. And it's just not going to let you see them. So, at least not easily. You could, but it's not going to happen by default. The easiest thing to do is to turn your TP-Link router into what's called an access point. So, turning off its routing functionality so that all it's doing is taking the network that's been created by the Airport Extreme and extending that, or bridging that, I guess is a better way to say it. So, I don't have a TP-Link router here. I don't know their terminology, but there's a couple of, and so we'll kind of homogenize the advice for anyone. There's a couple of different terms that are used to describe this, and we've already used some. Changing it from being a router to an access point is one. Buffalo definitely uses that. Netgear uses that terminology, router versus access point. Apple uses something called bridge mode. That means the same thing. It's not being a router anymore. It's just being a bridge to the network. Also, some routers don't even have a specific mode, but what you would do is turn off two things. You'd turn off NAT routing, NAT, network address translation. You turn that off and also turn off the DHCP server that stops the device from handing out its own IP addresses, and then we'll hand out addresses from the main router, which is your Airport Extreme. So whatever TP-Link or your router brand, I mean, this advice is for everybody. Whatever your router brand is calling it, you want to sort of dumb down that TP-Link device and turn off a bunch of its functionality so that it just lets traffic pass through. And then everybody's equal on the same level of the network, as opposed to building a tiered network, which is what happens when it's in router mode, which is, of course, its default, because that's what you'd want it to be in if you just plug directly into your cable modem. Does that make sense? Did I get that right, John? Did I miss anything?
I think we're on the same page. So okay. The thing is, yeah, you don't want to have multiple devices. Yeah, as you said, if you have multiple devices acting as routers, then one of them potentially could create its own little world or subnet, I guess.
That's a nice way to say it. Yeah, creates its own little world.
It creates its own range of IP addresses that are isolated potentially from the rest of your network. And then you run into this sort of problem. So, and a bridge really is kind of, although it's dumb, and I'll say it's dumb, but that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. A bridge is where you're eliminating intelligence from the device because you don't want it to be intelligent. You want to be like, no, don't try to be smart. Don't try to assign IP addresses. Don't try to do this or that. Just let it flow or let it go.
Let it go. Yeah, that's right.
And I'm not going to sing the song because I'm going to have people shaking their fists right and left at me. But
it's hard not to, though, isn't it?
And I can't sing the song either. I can't sing it well. But But yeah, the problem is when you have multiple devices trying to do the same smart thing, this is what happens. So you want to dumb them all down. And again, bridge mode is one way, or the terminology differs. I'll agree with you. And sometimes it's hard to find that.
This scenario, as many of you in the chat room are indicating, and of course, folks in the chat room are listening live while we record at MacGeekGab.com/stream or through the MacGeekGab iOS app, which is now available for free. So I encourage you to go get that. In fact, please go get it, and then we'll tip you when it's going to be live. But what a lot of them are saying is that the term for this is called double NAT. And as I said, NAT is network address translation. That's what takes one IP address and then creates its own subnet of many, many others from that one. And that's what's happening. You're just sort of creating these, you're spawning these additional networks, and that's not what you want to do. So perfect. Along those same lines, listener Ron writes in and says, I moved to a new domicile. At the former home, I hardwired my AirPort Extreme N to my TV, receiver, AirPort Express, and 2010 Apple TV with an Ethernet hub with no issues. I tried the same thing in my new residence, but it is not working as expected. I have Comcast and use my AirPort Extreme in bridge mode to set up my network. I hardwired the AirPort Express using Ethernet to the AirPort Extreme, but every time I tried to set up the network, the internet stopped working. Previously, I set the AirPort Express to extend my internet, and it worked. I did some Googling, and it was suggested that I try to create a new network and then use the same name as my primary network, but every time I tried that, it failed. I finally retried Wi-Fi, and all is well, but it still bugs me that I cannot hardwire the AirPort Express. And he says, also, my 2010 Apple TV, and I think these two are related, my 2010 Apple TV, which has worked fine until now, simply will not pick up my network, either hardwired or Wi-Fi. I called Apple, and they had me restore the Apple TV to default settings, but still no luck. The Apple guy suggested that I called Comcast and ask them to open port 123, which they did without it helping. The Apple TV has worked flawlessly elsewhere. Okay, so a couple of things. Creating a new network on the Express is the right move, but you also need to set that device into bridge mode. When you're in, again, it's the same, that part of it, there's more to this, but that part of it is the same as the question or the answer that we had for Larry. It needs to create a new network, but it needs to be in bridge mode, and it sounds like it might not be. So that's step one. As a test, though, try creating it with a different network name, just so you can really diagnose and say and know which one you're connecting to as you're testing. Once you get it tested out and it's working, then homogenize the names. And we can actually talk a little bit about network name homogenization. Maybe we will, but you can, then you can do that once you're done, but it does help for troubleshooting to have them set differently. So that's step one. When you wire your Apple TV, I'm curious what kind of IP address it's getting and what device you're plugging it into. I think it's suffering from a lot of the same stuff. But here's the thing. You have Comcast, and Comcast's current blend of cable modems that are out in the market are combination cable modems and routers. What's happening for you here is you have a double NAT scenario. You have your Comcast cable modem, which now is also being a router. So that's step one, and it's then creating a network. And then your AirPort Extreme is set just like it was in your prior home, and it's creating its own network. And so you've got these layers of networking, and that's part of where probably some of your connection problems are coming. The best thing to do, and Comcast makes it relatively easy to do this, is to turn off the routing functions in your Comcast modem and just make it a modem. And there's a link we'll put in the show notes that basically teaches you how to put your Comcast modem into bridge mode. You just log into it and do it. And it's pretty straightforward, and it works very well. I've done it on many modems of family members. Thankfully, I still have a very functional Comcast modem that is not a router, but at some point, I'm sure I will have one that is, because you don't have an option anymore. But I think that's the answer there. Thoughts, John?
I think you're right.
I think so. All right. Let's see. Let's pull up the old schedule here. You know what? You know what I want to do, John, is I want to I want to do something. We did this a couple of shows ago and it met with resounding success. So I want to do all of our sponsors at once here. And I think I want to do that now. You ready, John?
I am ready, my friend.
All right. Well, the first sponsor I want to talk about is Smile. Smile has been sponsoring this show, not quite from the very beginning, but basically, certainly from within the first year. And they have never, ever stopped. It has continued unabated ever since, probably 10 years now. If that's not a testament to the fact that they love podcasts and specifically this podcast, I don't know what is. But I can tell you, because I know the people there, they love podcasts. Well, to share some of that love, they're giving you 20% off of new licenses from now through the middle of October, October 15th, as long as you purchase directly from Smile. That means 20% off of PDF Pen, all-purpose Mac PDF editor. I talk about this thing all the time. I use it to add signatures. I use it to add images to PDFs. I use it to make changes, correct typos on PDFs. It OCRs in my scanned documents, exports in Microsoft Word, all of that. That's 20% off. 20% off of PDF Pen Pro, which takes PDF Pen and adds to it the ability to make interactive forms, build table of contents, and convert web pages to PDFs in a very handy way, much better than you get with just, you know, Safari or whatever. 20% off that. And of course, 20% off Text Expander, one of my favorite shortcut utilities. In fact, today, with my wrist being what it is, I had to, I had to reply to a bunch of emails as we prepped the show. I needed to tell people why my replies were going to be short. So I typed a little snippet that said, hey, I hurt my wrist, so apologies for the short reply. Thank goodness for Text Expander. And I actually put that in the snippet and then I saved the snippet. So all I had to do was comma WR. Boom. That was out there at the beginning. That way I could let all of you know that's why you were getting shorter than normal replies from me. Check it out. SmileSoftware.com/geek or use coupon code geek. Yep, that's GEEK at checkout. 20% off at smilesoftware.com/geek for all of the stuff that you're buying there. Second sponsor I want to talk about today is Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG. The folks at Lynda have created, well, frankly, they've created something very similar to what we have here. Lynda, like us, has a goal of teaching you something new each and every time you visit. Here, we only visit once a week, so you get a few new things, and that's great. But in the middle of the week, what are you going to do? Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG, lets you go and learn all kinds of new things with their awesome training videos. These videos are fantastic. They have professionals, either staff members at Lynda, staff teachers at Lynda, I should call it, staff instructors, or people that are experts in their field that also record videos for Lynda. And these videos allow you to really dig in and see what's happening right there. It's absolutely outstanding the way that they put all of this together. It blows me away with the care and attention that they put in to making sure these things actually teach you what they're supposed to teach you. You want to learn a programming language? You actually get to see examples right there on the screen. You want to learn Final Cut Pro? You get to see someone using Final Cut Pro while they tell you what they're doing. You want to learn management fundamentals? You get to see somebody talking to you about this stuff. There's a human element to it as well. And the best part is you can press pause if you want to digest a little bit. Where else can you be in a classroom environment and press pause without both the teacher and your fellow students glaring at you? Lynda's where you can do that. LYNDA.com/MGG gets you 10 free days of all of these training videos. And then once you sign up, it's $25 a month. It's amazing. You got to check it out. It's the future of learning. LYNDA.com/MGG. Our third sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace.com/MGG. There's a pattern here. The best part about Squarespace is that you get to create and host your website in one spot, and you do it all in your web browser. You visit squarespace.com/MGG and you start building by selecting a template. And the cool thing is their templates are built for all different purposes. You kind of narrow down and then pick a design that you like. And then you just start editing. Their controls are really easy to use, very intuitive. You're already used to being in a web browser because you live in one all day. And so you really get to just tweak things. They've also built their templates to be what's called responsive. And what that means is they adjust themselves on the fly. So you get to see the right website when you're on a Mac or on a PC or on any kind of desktop. And then as the window gets smaller, it looks good on an iPad. And then as the window gets smaller still, it looks good on an iPhone. This happens all behind the scenes. You don't have to worry about it. They already have. They spend months building these templates. Really professional. And the best part is you can pull in your data. So like I wanted my DaveTheNerd.com blog in there. Now I know how to build a website. I know how to build a content management system. I built the first one that we used at Mac Observer. Doesn't mean I want to build and maintain one today though. And Squarespace is awesome. But I didn't start with Squarespace. I started with WordPress and hosted it myself because I know how to host. I didn't want to do that anymore either. So I moved everything in and it slurped in all my WordPress data. It was awesome. Really simple, really beautiful. You got to check it out. Squarespace.com/MGG. And here's the deal. Plans start at $8 a month. And if you sign up for a year, you get a free domain. You want to sign up for a year. There's no question about that. You definitely want to just, you know, you don't want to change your website every month. You don't want to change who you host with. You don't want to change your design every month. And if you do, Squarespace has more forms and more templates for you. So check it out. $8 a month, free domain. Here's the thing. You can save 10% off of that with coupon code MGG. Check it all out. Squarespace.com/MGG. Thanks to Squarespace. Thanks to Linda. And thanks to Smile for being our sponsors of this episode. Thank you so much to all of you for supporting them and for them for supporting us. I think it's time to go to Brian. What do you think, John? You ready?
You do?
I do.
Well, if you do, I do.
So sweet.
Brian has, I don't know if a problem, but we'll help him out. So Brian writes and says, I'm running into Gmail. Well, no, he has a problem. Okay. So Brian says, I'm running into Gmail problems with Mail app, that being the Mail app, the Mail application in OS X. That started when I upgraded to Yosemite. Well, you're not the only one. I either have the wrong configuration in Gmail or in Mail.app, or Mail.app is not the best software client for running Gmail. I think. What is the Gmail configuration to Google and on the Mail app in Yosemite? I think I'll answer that. Is there a better client to use instead of Mail app? And what, if anything, do I lose? I don't use iCloud, so that's not an issue. I use Mail app for my personal Gmail and work Gmail for my EDU account. So my advice, Dave, is as follows. So first, if you are using OS X Mail to access Gmail, here's what I do. And this is what I do, Dave, and I'm not running into any problems. So if you go to System Preferences, Internet Accounts, and then you click on the little plus sign, it'll ask you, hey, what service do you want to set up here? And this is how I'm set up, Dave. I don't know if it's how you're set up, but this is how I'm set up. And at least for the Google that I use, which at this point now I don't use Google for personal stuff, but I do. So you and I still use it for Gmail. For MacGeekab as a conduit. So I would say rather than a generic IMAP account, I would choose Google in the list of account types. And once you enter your username, password, and stuff like that, it'll say, okay, what services would you like to enable for this Google account that you have? Mm. And you can click on Mail. And there's a few others. So for most services, you can click on Mail. I think there's, you know, notes, calendars, stuff like that. So my suggestion is make sure that if you are going to set up a Gmail account with under OS X, that's the way that you do it. I don't have anything, Dave, proving that that is better than setting up a generic email account. And it sounds like you're chomping at the bit to tell me maybe what I said is not right, but it works for me. For our Mac Geek Gab accounts that are on Gmail,
yeah,
I have them both set up under OS X as Google accounts, and that seems to work for me. So that's one piece of advice. But it sounds like you want to interject and then hand it back to me because we have another thread.
Okay. Yeah. So I haven't done that. Actually, my Mac is set up that way. In fact, if you try to set it up as an IMAP account, it will bounce it around to being a Gmail account anyway on the Mac.
Right.
Yep. So I don't think it matters. In fact, I'm looking at this right now because I know that I've set all my Macs up with it as Gmail or IMAP.
As a Google. Really?
Yeah. Okay. But
so when you went through the setup, you didn't specify Google, but you went further.
Yes.
Because at least in the internet account section of system preferences, you get a choice. You can say, I want to set up a Google account, or it says other. And then you can say, OK, I want to set up a IMAP account.
Yeah. So I set mine up as IMAP because it used to be better that way. But now I'm looking at all of my accounts and every one of them is a Google account. So, yeah, it doesn't make a difference here. On iOS, it still does make a difference. I do it as a separate IMAP account solely because if you do it as a Google account on iOS, you cannot have multiple from addresses. Whereas if you do it as a regular IMAP account, you can. And I don't know why that limitation exists. It's not a Google limitation. It's just that path in iOS. But either way, it's actually the same on OS X Mail. It's still connecting over IMAP. There's no difference. And if you look in, I guess it's details there. No, it's not details there. If you go into Mail and look in the preferences at your accounts, you will see that it's connecting to Google's IMAP servers imap.gmail.com. It does not let you change them, though.
Right.
And here's something interesting that I've noticed on iOS. And I think we've talked about this before. When iOS starts complaining that it can't log into your Google account or it's not getting anything from your account, you can change the IMAP server from imap.gmail.com to imap.googlemail.com. And it will actually it'll usually check mail better because it's an iOS caching issue. So there you go. It's all crazy. I don't know.
Okay. So the headline.
Yes.
Of what you said. I mean, it is setting up as.
It doesn't make a difference.
Okay. So what I said makes no difference.
Right. Right.
Well, that makes me sad, my friend. But
yeah.
I'm still going to offer it as advice.
Well, the nice part about it is if there is ever a change to, the right way to do SSL and the right port to do SSL and all of that stuff, right? You're going to inherit that change from Apple's defaults. So it's not a terrible way to do it. And like I said, I don't think you could get away with doing it the other way, unless maybe you used imap.googlemail.com. That might work.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do have one recommendation, though, and some people may not like this, but turn off the all mail mailbox in Google's IMAP. Were you going
to
go there?
You really think you still have to do that? Oh, no, yeah. No, I wasn't, but I was, I actually was going to ask you, or actually I wasn't, but now that you bring it up, that was a recommendation, and I think you wrote an article, actually, a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Suggesting, especially, because I don't think the problem came up in Yosemite. I think it came up in Mavericks, right? I mean, it came up in a couple of versions ago where if you had a certain feature enabled, what was it?
If all mail was enabled...
It caused a train wreck in Apple Mail because it just didn't understand how to deal with it. It would re-download all your email.
Well, that's
which
the
was
problem.
Like, could take days or
It
was terrible.
The all mailbox, the way Google create IMAP is supposed to be a way for a client to sync up with a server and have the same data in both places. So you can have a folder of, you know, called active clients, a folder called, family stuff, and anything you put into that folder from any client will get synced around. But it's each folder is discrete, right? So they are, if you have a message in one folder and you put it in another, it is a move. So if you move something from active clients to family, it now is in family, but not in active clients. That's the way IMAP works. Gmail does not work that way. Gmail has labels. It does not have folders. So you can have things in multiple folders or multiple labels. And all mail is simply a label that is to show you all of your mail. But the problem is it also applies to IMAP. So when you sync up with the IMAP thing, you get the stuff in your inbox that's in your inbox. You get the stuff that's in active clients that's in your active clients folder slash label. You get the stuff that's in family that's in your family folder slash label. And then you get all of it again in all mail. And that's where it gets really ugly, because you start getting duplicate copies of messages. Yeah.
I would see the same message 2, 3, 4.
I tested this with not the latest 10.10.5 version of Yosemite, but I did test it. I don't know. I want to say 6 months ago, just to see, because I thought, because there was some iOS mail client that desperately wanted all mail enabled. And so I thought, well, let me see, maybe it's okay. And I turned it back on and it was just a train wreck on OS 10 again. So I just turned it off. And you do this, you go into Gmail on the web, you go into settings, you go into folders, and I'm not there right now. So my apologies for hacking through this, but there is a little box, checkbox. So you go into settings and you go into labels, and then there's a checkbox next to every label that says show in IMAP. And for all mail, I just have it unchecked, and then everything's all right. Unless you have a client on iOS that needs it, and then it's not okay. And you got to turn it on and live with whatever happens in mail. So I throw it back to you.
Thank you. And I caught it. Thread number two is, hey, could I run a different application? And I offered, Dave, an application that the good folks at Dropbox actually alerted both me and you about. And I gave it a run. I don't use it too often, but, I have it installed. But it's called Mailbox App, and you can get it at www.mailboxapp.com. It's a company that I think Dropbox actually acquired.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggested you may want to look at that. Then I was almost wishing I took that back.
Huh.
In that I don't know. No, seriously. And I wrote the Dropbox people. I'm waiting for them to get back to me. Dropbox, I love you guys, but I'm questioning their commitment to this app. So number one,
well, they just released a new beta like 2 weeks ago of Mailbox.
They did. Yeah. So for the longest time, it was at 0.3, and all of a sudden it jumped to 0.7.
Yep.
On OS 10.
Yep.
It's more mature on non-OS 10, like iOS and Android, I guess they offer it.
Okay.
So the thing is that it's still officially in beta status, but the thing is, this is a OS 10 email client that will interact with, as far as I can tell, their audience is Gmail and iCloud or .Mac people. That those are the types of accounts that this particular email client deals with. And the last time I ran it, it seemed to do a pretty good job. Now, some of my fish shakes, and I sent a support email to them. So number one, if you go to their site, it downloads the 0.3 version. If you run it, it says, hey, there's a download to update. And I'm like, great, I want to go to 0.7. And it says, sorry, there's a signature error, can't update. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Really?
Yeah, and I wrote them about this, and a number of people have shaken their fist at them. The thing is,
I don't know, man.
Get the 0.7 version from Mac Update or multiple other third-party sites.
Stop, because that's not true anymore as of today. I downloaded it when we were prepping the show, and I just tried it again. And if you go to mailboxapp.com and choose download, you get the 0.7.4 version.
So obviously they saw my email updated their site.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Dropbox, for listening to me.
Yeah. No, that's all fixed. Yeah.
No, seriously, dude, like 2 days ago, when I tried to download it from their site, it was 0.3. And I'm like, guys, I wrote them. I was being snarky. I'm like, are you even paying attention to this product or this beta? And obviously they are. Thank you very much. So
yep.
Hats off Dropbox. You're good. They're making an effort to write a third party email client that will handle iCloud and Gmail. So that's my suggestion. But I'm curious, Dave. All right. So now that we're convinced Mailbox app is back in the running.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least they're paying attention. When I went to the App Store, I saw some candidates that were free, some pay for. I think I saw the one that jumped out at me was something called Mailplane, which I don't know if it's a full client. It's more, or maybe it is. I don't know. But I'm actually curious. I believe you have something to say about this. But third party Gmail clients, what's your take on this versus Mailbox app?
You mean versus mail.app? Mailbox or is mail.
The one that we just talked about.
Yeah, well, Mailbox is third party too, right? I mean,
I understand, but are you aware of any other Mac OS X email clients that work with Gmail that are worthy?
Well, there's Outlook from Microsoft, and that's actually actually kind of like that. There are, but here's the thing. And there's Airmail as well, right? For Gmail. So yeah, there's quite a few. Here's the problem that I have. If you like the features, all of these are going to be relatively simplistic compared to what Apple's Mail app can do. Now, that may be a good thing, right? You may like that. But you got to go into these knowing that they're going to be very... They almost all feel like iOS apps in that they're, you know, single purpose apps. And if all you're doing is, you know, checking your email and archiving it and checking it and archiving it, you're probably going to be happy if that's all you want to do. But Mail app for OS X is extensible, meaning there's a plugin architecture. Now, it's not really well documented by Apple and kind of have to, you know, you got to know what you're doing to program for it, but there are people that do. And so things like Mail Acton and Mail Tags and Signature Profiler and all of these other great add-ons to Mail that really make it shine are not available for all of these other third-party clients. So, and also, you know, Apple develops Mail, obviously, and it's pretty good. I know we like to complain about it, but if you use the right plugins, you can really make it work well for you. Because Apple continues to develop Mail, and it is a what I would call a full-featured Mail client, it doesn't leave a whole lot of room for people to make money selling a third-party Mail client. And we've seen it happen time and again. And you know, Mailbox app is a perfect example of this, where somebody built something, it was the new hotness for a little while, everybody got excited about it, but there's not enough interest. There's not critical mass to support the development of it. Now, Dropbox acquired it, right? It wasn't Dropbox's initially, but they acquired it. And I think I might have that wrong. I'll blame the pain meds if so. But even they are sort of ignoring it because it's not this thing that there's enough people using. So my feeling is I don't want to change Mail apps every year. I've learned to deal with Mail. There's a couple of plugins, and I've mentioned a few of them. In fact, those are basically it. You know, GP Gmail is the other one. So GP Gmail, Signature Profiler, and Mail Acton are the three that those I use. And they, especially GP Gmail, not so much, but Signature Profiler, Mail Acton, totally revolutionized my world inside Mail. And I like it. And I have a reasonable expectation that the app that I currently use today is going to work in El Capitan, because guess what? It's made by Apple. So that's where
Go ahead. Did you say El Capitan?
Yeah, I did.
Not El Capitan?
That's right. The mountain is El Capitan.
Did you? Check your mail.
the mountain in the Yosemite Park is El Capitan. E-L space C-A-P-I-T-A with an accent N.
Right.
So and Apple said they named OS 10, 10.11 after the mountain inside Yosemite. So I'm assuming it's El Capitan.
Not tan.
Not tan.
Baton.
Ton. That's how it's pronounced.
You think?
I do. That's why I said it. That is what I think. Do you think differently?
No, I've had it brought to my attention. There is a controversy as to how that's pronounced.
All right. Okay. Wait, you going to talk more about it, or are you just going to let that linger out here?
Hold on.
Okay. He went somewhere, folks. This has gotten very, very serious.
I'm away from the mic.
I know he's away from the mic. We all know you're away from the mic. It's okay.
All right, no. I got a note from our good friend, Allison Sheridan.
Okay.
Who does the No Solo Cast podcast.
Yeah,
podcast. She says that these crazy Californians say El Capi Tan.
Okay, well, the crazy Texans
if you look at the video, because I referred to it, so I was joking with her, and I said Craig also said it wrong. The thing is, Craig also says, all right, Craig Federighi. I can't pronounce. Yeah, Craig also said tan. So I'm just offering that for reference.
Well, okay? When I lived in Austin,
so both Allison, I understand that. Allison, California, and Craig all say it wrong because they say tan.
Sure. So when I lived in Austin, obviously it's close to Mexico. In fact, there's a rich history of there being, you know, lots of Spanish influence and Mexican influence there.
Of course, in
Texas. There are streets in Austin that happen to be named after Spanish names or words, or Mexican places or whatever. There is one street. It is spelled S-A-N space J-A-C-I-N-T-O. San Jacinto is the name of that particular person, saint. Everybody in Austin calls that street San Jacinto. Guadalupe is another street. What do they call it in Austin? Guadalupe. Are they correct in Austin? No. Is that what everybody calls it because that's what everybody calls it? Yes. But it is an incorrect pronunciation. That's all.
I get it. The thing that strikes me in the final conversation, so I was joking around with, to me, it doesn't matter as long as you understand what people are talking about. But the thing is, the one thing I wrote back to her once I researched it on the Wikipedias is, there is an accent on the A that actually suggests a non-standard. So it's El Capitan, because there's an accent on the A, but the only place you're going to see that accent is if you go to the Wikipedia article.
Right.
For that mountain. You will not see it. And actually, somebody wrote me saying, have you seen it on any street signs? And no signs. So the thing is, to me, if you understand what I'm talking about, the pronunciation doesn't matter.
Right.
But Allison wrote me and said, hey, as a Californian, and because Craig said it this way, and guys, watch the video of the event. They say tan. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say if it's right or wrong. As long as we all understand that this is the next version of OS 10, I'm good.
Right. Right.
And yeah. I'm probably going to say it wrong, just like you, Dave.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the right way to pronounce it, though, regardless of whether the Californians
tan or choose
tan.
All right. Well, check your email. Talk to Allison.
Yeah, I saw the email. I mean, I saw your Facebook post or whatever it was. But it's fine. I'm okay with it.
Enough about Spanish
in high school. So you know, I'm pretty sure that's the right way to pronounce it.
Unless there's an accent on the A, and that was the thing that kind of swayed me.
Yeah. No. The accent on the A changes the accent. So instead of it being El Capitan, it's El Capitan. That's what the accent means. It is an accent. It doesn't change the sound. It changes the accent. So it's not El Capitan. Right. It's El Capitan because of the accent.
Okay. All right. Don't cough. I get it. Oh, sorry.
I didn't start this one.
I comprendo español or hablo español, whatever. Yeah. Okay. All right. Away from that. We got to get to solving people's problems.
We have a Spanish teacher in the in the chat room, Brett.
Uh-oh.
And he confirmed my my pronunciations.
Really?
Yeah.
So Apple is getting it wrong. That's good to know.
Well, in that all of California is getting it wrong, it sounds like. I mean, I don't want to lump everybody in California just because Craig Federighi and Allison Sheridan are wrong. Well, it's just like, again, I bring back the people in Austin. You know, San Jacinto is not the right way to pronounce that particular name, but it's what they all do. It's okay. Just don't start yelling at the people in Mexico for pronouncing it wrong. And that's kind of what's happening here. Yeah.
And I'm going to wrap up with saying, Dave, do you know the way to San Jose? And with that.
Yeah, that's right. That's the Baja Marimba Band, man.
All right. So what do you got next on the agenda here? So
you going to take us to Mark?
Boy, dude. That was just a tangent there. So Mark has questions in a virtual world. And I'm going to give you my advice, Dave.
Okay.
You may agree or not agree, but
sure.
So basically, Mark wrote in and said, Dave, John, and PP, which I think is Pilot Pete, who is no doubt piloting and peeing somewhere. I have a Windows laptop that I've been keeping alive to run apps. Do you have a preference for Parallels or VMware or some other choice to run Windows apps on the Mac? I have a mid-2009 17-inch MacBook Pro with 8 gigs of RAM running 10.10.5. And Dave, my response is as follows. My initial suggestion would be to give the free, and I believe open source, though even if it isn't, free VirtualBox product a try. And you can go to www.virtualbox.org. And the reason I suggest this is because these guys are on the ball. If you go to their site, they have just made a major upgrade to version 5.0. And I'll agree, it's not VirtualBox does not allow quite the level of fine-grained control over the virtual machine that Parallels and VMware does have, or offer additional goodies, which the other guys do, like antivirus and some other additional software that come with the bundle. They do provide, I would say, good basic emulation, in my experience. The only caveat I would have is that in the past, when I have tried to use it, especially in a corporate environment, sometimes it doesn't quite grok some oddball, non-standard USB devices, like the ones that I was working on that were new products, which probably isn't a big surprise, but for standard things, yes. The one plus I will give VirtualBox, Dave, is that we had a prior discussion and that VirtualBox, unlike some other virtual machine products, will allow you to run older versions of OS X within a virtual machine and not yell at you saying you're violating the license agreement, which,
seriously,
as you and I think agree, Dave, I believe that the interpretation of the license agreement that VMware and Parallels imposes on people, I believe, and I believe you backed me up on this, is flawed. And that you can,
right,
in fact, yep, legally run OS X within a virtual machine and not break the law and have the Apple software cops coming
so current
after you.
Current versions, so everything from certainly Yosemite and Mavericks, and I believe Lion, are there is no question that that is legal, and things like VMware's Fusion or Parallels will run those, but it's Snow Leopard that's the question, right? And so what you, and they won't, right. Parallels and VMware Fusion will not run Snow Leopard because it'll just come up. It will run it if you can convince it not to, look at the version.
Or hack it.
Yeah, right. There used to be ways to hack it. I don't know if there still are. I'm guessing there are. I just haven't found them. But if you know about them, let us know. But you're saying VirtualBox will run Snow Leopard without yelling at you. Is that right?
Correct, because they do not put what I view as an artificial block.
That's great.
On,
so it's
on
up to you. It. It's up to you to be responsible with whatever license, correct, you have. That's perfect.
Right. So the other companies, they take it upon themselves to enforce what they believe the license agreement says.
Well, they have a relationship with Apple and they want to preserve that.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's good. Yep. Yeah. And they're fine products, but both Parallels. And to close it out, though, that being said, Dave, I personally, at this point in time, I run Parallels. I'll tell you why. I'll I'll tell you why. It's because, Dave, the media events that both you and I go to, the thing is, the Parallels people are wonderful about giving me, and I'm going to be honest here, giving me a free free license to their current product. They're awesome. I mean, whenever I see them at the thing, you know, Pepcom or whatever, they're awesome. They're like, hey, you want a license for the latest one? And I'm like, sure.
Sure.
And I run it, and it works for me, and I'm running. So right now, currently, Dave, I'm running Windows XP, Windows 7, and Windows 10 under Parallels 10. Not 11, but 10.
Yep.
And there is a little hitch, but all I got to say, and this is just, again, me personally, I'm, for what I need to do with Windows, which includes development work. So I went to Visual Studio to check out the latest version. Parallels totally meets my needs. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with VMware.
Yeah.
And I don't know about, and actually I want to hand it to you. I mean, my most recent experience with a commercial VM product is Parallels. I don't know about you, but I'm okay with Parallels.
Yeah. So, to your point, you're right that the folks at Parallels are great about interfacing with the press. The folks at VMware are also excellent about interfacing with the press. I don't know why you haven't run into people that are happy.
I haven't run into them.
You just haven't. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And so I have both. Jim Tanis just put up some, at Tech Review, which is MGG Jim. He helps us out quite a bit here as well. He put up some notes about VMware Fusion benchmarks, I guess just last week. Right. So those are worth checking out. I don't do anything with any of these packages that would make it so that the performance of one in terms of like CPU performance or graphics performance or game performance would make any difference to me. And in fact, I probably could run VirtualBox and also not be impacted by its performance. And I don't think there's any question that if you're going to start pushing the limits, VirtualBox is the first one to kind of fall off the map. I got my X-ray CD from the clinic, you know, where I got my X-rays done, and it has these X-ray images in this like special doctor's office format or whatever, but it comes with a viewer, and it's a Java
DICOM
viewer.
Okay. We have a friend online who I'm gonna maybe hand you off to.
Okay.
That's what he works for GE Medical Systems. DICOM is a specialized medical system format, but please, I'm sorry.
No, you're right. And so there is a viewer baked into this CD, and it's the Windows version and the Mac version. They're both Java based. And I can get it to launch on the Mac, but it will never reliably actually show me the image. It'll just, you know, launch the software and sort of let me navigate around, but I can't ever see the image. So I just launched it in Windows, and then I could see him there. And then I exported him, which I actually probably could have exported from the Mac build. So I had to run that this morning, and I ran an old copy of XP inside VMware, and it was fine.
Which, of course, running XP today, it's like, what are you, nuts?
Why?
Because that's, well, it's totally deprecated.
I know. It functioned, man. It was perfect. I didn't want.
Like I told you, I still. The thing is, they still offer the malware update. So when I run XP, it'll be like, "Yep, we still have the malware update." But they're not making any, as far as I know, security or other updates.
Yeah.
Windows 7, that's reaching end of life, and then again, like both you and I. I don't know about you, but I actually ran my Windows 7 installation, and it said, at some point, I had to coerce it, but it's like, oh yeah, you're eligible for the 10 upgrade. You want that?
Right.
So I actually copied my virtual disk file. So I want to maintain the 7 environment.
Sure.
But I'm like, but I also want the 10. And eventually it got to the point where it's like, yeah, I'll upgrade you because Microsoft will do this for you because they
want
to.
Yeah, they want you. Yeah, on the latest
Windows 10.
One.
Yep. And I'm like, yeah, I'll run it.
Yeah,
my humble opinion, a nutshell review here, Windows 10 seems to be the new shiny UI, but I'm not feeling that there's a lot changing underneath the covers. Maybe it's just the UI UX, for the uninitiated is user interface / user experience.
Right.
But I'm not, it wasn't like I ran Windows 10 and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all these absolutely, you know, groundbreaking new features. And hey, Microsoft, if you got some, let me know. Cool. Let me and Dave know. I love Microsoft. I like Microsoft.
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
hate them.
No, I don't. I don't either. They make good stuff.
Hey, they keep us in business, right?
Right. Hey, dude, I always said the first house I bought was, you know, mostly thanks to Windows 95. So,
and
the consulting revenue I generated from helping people use it, you know, so it was good. All right, let's jump on to Kaz, shall we? Let's see if we can get a couple more questions in before we have to wrap this one up. Kaz, Kaz has a lot of questions. And really what's going on is he says, Apple had a recall on the hard drives in some of these 2009 27-inch iMacs, for which mine qualified. I took it to the Genius Bar for replacement, but I tried to upgrade from a 1 terabyte to a 2 terabyte, but Apple's replacement program, of course, only allows like for like. So I took it to a certified third party. Everything has been flawless until now. I was in the middle of an iPhone backup using iMazing when I heard a terrible scratching sound coming from my Mac. I love the iMazing product, which I purchased after listening to your shows. However, is there any way that the software could have caused the crash? I say this because I recall hearing about the same sound a month ago when doing another backup with iMazing. Fortunately for me, I perform daily backups using SuperDuper, so when the hard drive crashed, I was able to boot up using the backup. My question is, should I purchase a new hard drive and replace the internal drive? Should I purchase a hybrid SSD/hard drive? Should I purchase an SSD and buy a new hard drive? Or should I buy a new iMac given the age of my existing one? And then we got a follow-up email, about a day later, I guess, saying, I'm going to go ahead and get a 5K Retina 27-inch, but I'm confused about which hard drive to get with it. And should I get the Fusion drive, the 3 terabyte Fusion drive, or should I get a 256 gig SSD and then an external drive? So lots of questions. I'm going to go, I think, in order. iMazing, in terms of the backups and the scratching sound you were hearing and all that, iMazing wouldn't cause the issue. Really, its backup process is no different than iTunes backup process. But it is a process where you are writing and parsing and updating lots and lots of little files on the disk. So it's constantly going back and forth, writing to the file system directory and then writing the actual file out and back and forth. So if you were to be having a problem with your drive, a process like that would exacerbate it for sure. Your super duper backups would probably, you know, kind of do something similar because they're just scanning everything and, you know, crunching through a lot of stuff. So yeah, it makes sense that would be the kind of thing that where, you know, if you were on the edge of having a problem, that's going to bring it right to the surface. Now, as far as replacing your computer and which hard drive to get, I still, I've come to realize that this is an irrational fear nowadays, but I still am averse to the Fusion drives. But there's no good reason for me to be averse to it. We get a lot of questions in here, a lot of problem reports, and I really can count on certainly one hand and maybe even one finger the number of Fusion drive, you know, disasters that we've heard of that are disasters because of the Fusion drive. Now, maybe that's because everybody that listens to this show backs up, but guess what? So do you, Kaz. So you're in good shape there. I think you're all right with the Fusion drive. The only reason to go with a split setup, which of course you can do if you get a Fusion drive, you can break it and use it as separate disks. The only reason to go with the Fusion drive or the non-Fusion drive is to maximize and control your performance, right? If you know what things you're putting on the SSD versus what you're putting on the spindle drive, you're going to be able to really kind of tweak and control that. And I do enjoy that process on my iMacs. In fact, on this one and also on the one down in my office, I've got them separated. The one in my office, I have a 512 gig SSD, and that's more than enough for the system and all my apps and everything. And then I store my photos and my music and all my movies and, you know, all of that stuff, like my iMovies and stuff, on an external drive that I have attached that's plenty fast in and of itself. So, you know, I think it's personal preference at this point, but I don't have any technical reasons to advise against the Fusion drive at this point. What do you think, John? Hello?
I I'm trying to ponder my response and make it sound like it's not crazy talk, but I'd much rather prefer to manage my own integration or separation of SSD and rotational drives. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. I've not used
a Fusion drive. We've had maybe one. I think we've had one question, yeah. and we kind of addressed it in the past, in passing. But we've had one person saying, "Yeah, I kind of saw some weird stuff in Disk Utility, and I think my Fusion drive is broken." And I think it was. And there's a potential for things to get out of sync between the SSD and the rotational drive. And your Fusion drive can be broken. And you may have to go to Disk Utility or maybe even dig deeper to decouple them and then get Disk Utility or the OS to recouple them.
Right.
So that's the only thing I'll say about that.
But it's so, I mean, I think it's so rare. But you're right. That was sort of the initial fear of it. It's like, whoa. Dude.
Like I said, there's one situation.
You got it. Yeah.
In all the listeners, among the 5 or 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kidding. Kind of being like Car Talk. They're like, of the 10 people listening to this show, I think we have probably a few more than that. But we've only had
some days it's six figures.
That's
listeners.
What I hear.
Yeah, some days. Not
in
always.
Base 10, which is
that's right.
Which is pretty awesome. Thank you
so
much.
It really is,
for
actually.
All of you.
Yeah.
We are honored. Awesome. We are humbled. But I think again, I can recall, I can count on one hand the number of people that have wrote in saying, I have a problem with my Fusion drive. For me, it's not for me, but that's just me.
So. Yeah, exactly. All right. I want to jump to Terry here because this was an interesting thing that I learned about. Yeah. So Terry, I don't know where Ari is, but Terry said, I set a restriction passcode in settings, general restrictions on my son's iPad, and now I want to remove it. But I can't remember what I set the 4-digit code to be. I could restore the iPad as a new iPad without the backup, but I want to avoid that if I can. Of course. Can I use iMazing to dig out the passcode, or is there any other way? And then he's got a second question, which we'll address here. So I started looking into this, and I can't find a way in iMazing to do it. There might very well be, because there is a way to do this. If you have backed up the iPad to your Mac, you can look in Library, Application Support, App Store, and then Adoption.plist. And in there, the code will live in raw text. So I've I've found an Apple Support discussion article.
Wow.
So-and-so that I'll put a link to.
That actually
kind of
concerns me. It's good for our listener, but it's kind of bad from a security standpoint.
Exactly. Well, remember, this isn't as much security as it is like parental. I mean, it could be used as security, but it's not.
Okay.
Right. Okay. It's not security. No one's saying this is protecting your data. This is protecting someone else, presumably, from getting
service access.
Service access. Yeah. However, I also found a YouTube video that explains the very simple process of using an app called iPhone Backup Extractor to get this. And it even has a menu item to pull out this this passcode. So that's, you can dig into the file if you want to do it, or you can just go get it, with this app. Yeah.
And no doubt the kids these days are certainly aware of this and use it to access the sexy time or whatever
it is. Yeah. I think it's more
whatever they're trying whatever to get at that you don't want them to get at. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even imagine. I mean, I have to imagine this because I have teenage kids, but I mean, what it would have been like at, 13, 14, 15, with access to everything on the internet. I mean, you and I had access to more than most people did simply because we were
pixelated, but
yeah, exactly. Well, if you're talking about graphics and stuff, but I'm just talking about like just data in general, it's outstanding the amount of data that, I mean, it's everything and our kids have them in their pockets. So yeah, it's scary raising kids right now. It's interesting.
It is because they, you know, it's funny because I'm not a parent, Dave. Obviously you are. And sure. You have the most, I won't say toxic, but no, I'm going to say challenging environment. And you have teenage, you have two teenage kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I don't even know how you deal because.
I'll tell you how we deal.
You're talking walking bags of raging hormones and irrational behavior on a daily basis. And sometimes you love them to death and sometimes you want to throw them out the window.
Right.
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 Did I get that kind of right?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the thing is, the way we deal with it is that we started dealing with it decades ago in that.
Oh, as far as the content issue. Internet issue or.
No.
Okay. Go.
Yeah. Every subject imaginable is on the table for discussion. And that's almost a literal thing. It usually comes up at the dinner table. And I mean, we've had weird, weird discussions, topics that would actually cause me to have to set this show to probably be explicit, but that's like normal dinner table conversation for us, that just weird stuff comes up in the world. And we just talk about it so much so that it's not weird to anybody. So yeah, they're kids. They're going to do all kinds of, they're going to do stupid things. They're going to make mistakes. Of course they are. But we talked about it. You know, there's few things, if anything, that are hidden.
Well, that's good. If they have a channel, and I got to say, again, I'm not a parent, but if they have a channel, if your kids are not afraid to ask you a question.
Correct.
You know, mom or dad, is this all right? Or what does this mean? Or what should I do?
Yeah.
Then if you got that channel, I would say you're doing good.
Yeah, I think good. So. Yeah, yeah. All right. You know, what am I going to do here?
Press the button?
Yeah, I think I am. Because I can hear the audio getting a little clicky and weird, and I don't know if that's just my ears or not, but...
For you?
Yeah, not me? Yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't know
if it's... My audio, and you sound marvelous.
Well, that's good. But everything's getting a little weird, and I didn't reset the board before we did the show today, and we're also at, like, the hour and 12-minute mark here, so... It's all good. We can,
our timestamps are in sync. That's good.
That's right.
But you know what else we're in sync with, Dave? I'm almost going to bet 100% that we are in sync on how you, the listener, can get in touch with us. And I'm going to offer that if you want to get in touch with us, Dave, you want to ask a question, you want to give us a compliment, you have a complaint. Cookies, brownies, snacks, but I still haven't seen them transpire through the digital channels. And I really would, Dave. But I would say you want to send an email to feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's feedback@macgeekgab.com, I believe, is what you meant to say, of course. And you're right. You can send us anything there. We want to see it all.
I blew it, man. I'm sorry. I was thinking feedback@macgeekgab.com, but I made that clear. But there's another way to, there are multiple ways, Dave, and I will let you make the choice.
premium@macgeekgab.com is for everybody that's a premium subscriber to the show. And the premium address is one of the perks that you get. You get a little bit of priority. Today was one of those days. So just so you know, folks, if you sent something into feedback and John didn't reply to it, I have not gone through the regular feedback box with everything that's going on with my wrist. I wanted to type as little as possible. And thankfully, between what I prepped from the premium box and what John prepped from both, we had more than enough for this show. In fact, we probably got double what we already went through. So
did you make a shortcut? I'm almost certain you made a text expander shortcut.
I mentioned it during the spot earlier. That's right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I may have been away. I admit I walked away, but I saw that because you did that very strategically.
That's right.
Is that you put the same,
Yeah, put the little warning.
Saying, hey, you know.
Sorry.
My wrist busted. But I was like, I'm almost certain Dave is not typing that same text time after time.
No way. I'm sure
he has some sort of shortcut. And what better way to implement a shortcut for text than text expander?
That's right. So I have not gone through the feedback stuff. I will. I really don't believe my wrist is broken. And as such, I expect that within the next couple of days, it'll actually be quite a bit better than it is right now. So, but the premium folks did get the nod today. But most of the time we do get to, we do go through everything, but there are, you know, the premium stuff gets prioritized. If you want to call us, 206-666-GEEK is the number to call. And John, Geek is
4-3-3-5.
And I would love,
you know,
it.
I'm going to say, Dave,
go ahead.
I'm going to say there's probably another thing you could do for us, Dave.
Yeah,
I believe it was highlighted. You know,
I would love
if
it
if you listen to the show.
Yeah.
If you download it, even if you don't download it, there are multiple ways to listen to us. But
well, wait.
What that's we the, really love.
Here's what we love is reviews of the Mac Geek Gab app. Right. I really want you to download the app and review it. We'd love for that to happen because it's free now, right? So you grab your iPhone, download the app, check it out, and review it. And that we did just push an update. I say we. Corey just pushed an update this week. Thank you, Corey, that fixed that crash on launch issue. It seems like that's the problem with some apps. And it's not just us, you know, but obviously it happened to us. So, but that issue should be fixed, the crash on launch for some of you. And, it's just one of those things we can't find until it's out there. But please go leave us a review. We'd really, really like it right there in the iOS App Store. So,
okay. On the app.
On
I was
going
to say just
Thank
a
you,
regular
folks.
iTunes review.
You can do that too.
Which helps us and helps you because the thing is, if you review us on iTunes and you look at the iTunes top podcasts or whatever, it helps all of us because it kicks us up there. It still tickles me, Dave, after all these years, is that when I go to iTunes and I look at the technology podcasts, I see not only us, but a lot of our, you know, friends.
Yeah.
Like Allison and
Adam.
Yep. Adam, who else there? Katie, all them, all those people.
Yep.
Yeah. So people that we've been friends with and colleagues with for years. So if you have anything to say about the podcast, if you like what we do, go to iTunes and say, hi.
Sweet. All right. I want to thank the folks at Cachefly, CacheFly.com, for hosting the show on all their servers and providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And of course, I want to thank all our sponsors. We had Smile Software at smilesoftware.com/geek gets you 20% off of all the stuff in Smile Store, all the software there. Linda at lynda.com/mgg gets you 10 free days of videos. You got to check that out. Squarespace.com/mgg with coupon code MGG gets you 10% off there. Gazelle, man, new iPhone's coming tomorrow, most likely. Sell off your old one at Gazelle. Tunnelware.com/mgg for your VPN needs. iMazing, we mentioned it during the show. Good stuff. Got to check it out. iMazing.com/mgg. Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com. Thank them for us, as well as the great folks at Barebones. Folks, have a fantastic week. Have fun watching the Apple event tomorrow. And whatever you do, don't get caught. Made up.